Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Somebody killed Gabby Petito. Now to find out who and how. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
It was homicide. The coroner confirms Gabby Petito was killed. The new turn in the now criminal investigation and the added pressure to find her missing boyfriend. We're live where the search is happening now. President Biden addresses the UN General Assembly for the first time.
For the first time in 20 years, the United States not at war. We've turned the page.
His call for global unity.
I believe we must work together as never before.
And his veiled message for America's biggest competitor. A COVID treatment shortage nationwide. Monoclonal antibody infusions in high demand. Now one state moving to make it off limits for the vaccinated. Cutting-edge tech that could soon help your phone track your mental health, detecting depression, anxiety, even cognitive decline. Investigating the botched Kabul drone strike. The firefight to save the world's largest tree. And a sneak peek at a new motion picture museum.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. Somebody killed Gabby Petito and left her body near Grand Teton National Park. Investigators confirmed this news this afternoon. They say a coroner's autopsy determined the body found on Sunday is Gabby's. The cause of death? Homicide, according to the coroner's initial determination. No manner of death listed, no other details released, and a final cause yet to be issued. The case also officially now a criminal investigation. Police in Northport, Florida confirmed that today. They announced the FBI is taking the lead as local cops continue the search for her boyfriend and person of interest, Brian Laundry. Just minutes ago, investigators said they've now finished searching the sprawling Carlton Reserve for the day. Laundry's parents say that's where he was headed when he went missing, they say, last week. Police say they're focusing on the Venice side of the reserve, the western side. Northport, his home, is on the eastern side. Police say crews are wading through waist-deep swamp water at times, filled with native snakes and gators. A lawyer for the Laundry family announced that he would hold a news conference today, but then he said he was calling it off after speaking with the FBI. Meantime, we're hearing from a woman who says she believes she saw Brian Laundry and his van at the campground really near where searchers found Gabby's body. The San Francisco Chronicle newspaper reports she contacted the FBI after seeing photos of this van, the couple's van. She says she passed a van just like theirs. Inside, she says she saw, her words here, a generic white man. For the next 3 days, she says, that same man parked the van in an odd area, as she put it, not a designated parking spot. The woman told the newspaper he was definitely alone. We have multiple reports tonight. Eamon Javers on how internet sleuths are working this case. Jay Gray in Florida, where the search for the missing boyfriend will continue tomorrow. First to Valerie Castro in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Valerie, you got access to this area where investigators had been working, right?
That's right, Shep. This is the area where investigators made the discovery over the weekend. It is not easy to get to, and it's pretty far from the nearest roadway. But they spent a full day here after those human remains were discovered, now known to be that of Gabby Petito, processing the scene for evidence. Everywhere you look in this small area of the Spread Creek dispersed camp area, you can see orange spray paint markers believed to be where something of significance was documented by investigators. The markings were placed on trees and rocks and in some cases are numbered. In the same vicinity, many people have now noticed a rock cross in the sand along the banks of a stream. stream that's nearby. It's unclear who put it there or when it was created. Earlier today, a preliminary autopsy took place at the Teton County Coroner's Office. Several vehicles were seen leaving that facility, including a large law enforcement utility truck. Outside, a member of the coroner's office could be seen talking to someone, and hours later, it was announced that the remains are that of Gabby Petito. Following that announcement, the FBI issued a new flyer in this case, now declaring Gabby the victim of a homicide. It also asks that anyone who was in the Spread Creek camping area between August 27th and August 30th to give them a call. Now, Gabby's family has not spoken publicly since those remains were first discovered, and we learned through their attorney today that they do plan to speak publicly once they say Gabby's remains have been brought back home. Shep.
Valerie Castro live near Jackson Hole. Well, Brian Laundrie's been missing for at least 7 days now. Still no sighting. Our coverage continues. Jay Gray live near the Carlton Reserve in Venice, Florida, where officers have been searching, and Jay's been boating. Hi, Jay.
Yeah, absolutely, Shep. We are on an airboat. The best way to get into this area, look right to the side here. That's the Carlton Reserve. That's where these teams are searching for Brian Laundrie. And this is the kind of dense brush that they are having to work through. We want to give you an idea of the terrain of what these teams are going through. And to do that, we've got the captain of the airboat here to talk to us, Trey Ward. Trey, you know this area very well. What are they dealing with in their terrain-wise?
It's going to be very tough terrain, very thick terrain. There's lots of heavy brush in there, so it's going to be really hard to navigate through there, for one. Plus, you're dealing with the flood season. This is our high water time, so everything's underwater. Your trails are underwater. So navigating through those woods, especially 25,000 acres, that's a lot to navigate through, so it'd be easy to get lost.
There's another danger as you're working through here, and mm-hmm. that's the animals, right? I mean, there's a lot to deal with when it comes to that.
The wildlife is a huge factor in there. When you're talking about this type of wood, especially all the palmettos, it's big rattlesnake breeding country. Your palmettos are big for that. Also, because of the flood, you're going to get a lot of water moccasins out here. Water moccasins are a very deadly snake in Florida. They're a big problem.
And the rain like we're getting now, that's not
happening. The rain's
either,
a big
right?
factor. And then your big one is your alligators. Lots of alligators. This is all a part of Winnemiaca State Park, so there's a lot of alligators out here.
So the way it's been presented is that Laundrie went into this a week ago today mm-hmm. with just a backpack, a hiker, an avid hiker. Could he survive? Could he still be in there?
Depending on what he showed up with. You know, it depends on what he decided to come out here with, how long he was planning on being out here, what he brought. It'd be very difficult. Very difficult to survive in this type of terrain and out here, especially this time of year.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
And look, Chef, one other note on this as the search continues. There was a report of a sighting about 500 miles away in a panhandle in Okaloosa County. The sheriff there has worked through the leads and says it was not Brian Laundrie. That's the latest from right here at the Carlton Reserve. Back to you now.
Jay Gray, live on an airboat in the airboat and the canal next to the Carlton Reserve. Now, this has become a national sensation fueled by social media. The hashtag Gabby Petito has nearly 700 million views on TikTok alone. Tens of thousands of people posting on different platforms, hanging on every update that comes. Some even going as far as trying to help piece this mystery together, detailing theories, reviewing footage and photos. Ordinary people turned digital detective. But are they helping? CNBC's Eamon Javers looked into that for us. Eamon, this has become a giant open source investigation.
It really has, Shep. There are more than 140,000 people participating in a Facebook group dedicated to the Gabby Petito story. And on Reddit, well, more than 100,000 people are following it over there.
They're commenting on threads like this one. What still needs to be debunked or confirmed, it says, with posts about rumored boat trips Petito's boyfriend took, an old Instagram post she may or may not have made, and the map of the parking lot in the area where she disappeared. And they're not just commenting. A lot of these people believe they're helping the investigation and are actively trying to solve the mystery of what happened to Gabby. Law enforcement veterans say that outpouring of online citizen interest can be helpful, but it can also generate a tsunami of bad tips.
Some people are looking for that moment of fame. Other people are genuinely trying to help. Unfortunately, we can't determine which person is which when we get that lead.
In some ways, this is just an online version of the public outreach law enforcement has done since the days of the old wanted poster.
what people online can do is they can identify certain places that we wouldn't know off the top of our head. So they can lead us directly to certain places where you might find evidence where it could take us days or weeks.
But why this case? Why are hundreds of thousands of people poring over photos and videos in the hopes of solving one case among the thousands of missing person cases across the country? Even the moderator of the Reddit forum dedicated to Gabby Petito told me they don't know.
Shep, it may just be that this story touched a nerve because there's a compelling victim, a baffling mystery, and now an unfolding family tragedy. And something about that combination just provokes a sense that we need to do whatever we can, no matter how small, to help get to the bottom of it, Shep.
All right. Thanks very much. And if you have any information on the Gabby Petito case, especially any sightings of Brian Laundrie, call the number on your screen, 1-800-CALL-FBI. The federal government is controlling the supply of a popular COVID treatment, the demand outpacing that supply. States are now forced to ration the infusion and make decision on who gets it and who doesn't. The former FDA commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, live with us tonight on this, plus the booster fight and his new book detailing his interactions with the Trump White House when the pandemic first hit. Plus, crisis at the southern border. Haitian deportees reportedly assault U.S. pilots and injure several officers. The new reporting on what happened.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
The FDA could decide as soon as tomorrow whether to recommend booster shots for people 65 and older, and for those who are at high risk of severe disease. That's a key step in the authorization process. Separately, a panel of CDC advisors is expected to start meeting tomorrow to discuss boosters. If the FDA and CDC both sign off on the plan, states could start rolling out extra shots in the coming days. Meantime, new today, Johnson & Johnson reports a second dose of its vaccine is 94% effective against treating moderate to severe disease when administered 2 months after the first shot. That's compared to just 70% protection after the single dose. In a moment, we'll hear from the FDA commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb. But first, as U.S. regulators debate boosters, some states are sparring over COVID treatments. HHS is now controlling distribution of monoclonal antibodies as demand has surged. And some local officials say they're upset because treatments are being rationed across the country. CNBC's Meg Terrell covers science and medicine for us. How, Meg, are local leaders handling this shortage?
Well, Shep, some are making contingency plans for what happens if they don't have enough of these treatments. The Tennessean reported today that could mean people who are vaccinated don't get access. The idea is if there's limited supply of these drugs, the people at highest risk of bad outcomes from COVID should be prioritized. And most commonly, these are folks who didn't get the vaccine. Tennessee's Department of Health told us they're going by guidelines set by the National Institutes of Health if there's a shortage. Now, it's not clear that there currently is a shortage, but the federal government has resumed control of these drugs' distribution as their use skyrocketed with the summer surge. In late August, HHS said three-quarters of doses were being ordered by regions of the country with low vaccination rates, mainly across the South. The Biden administration has been emphasizing vaccination as the first line of defense against COVID, and vaccines are widely available and much less expensive than these drugs.
about $40 for two doses of vaccine, compared with more than $2,000 for a course of Regeneron's drug, all paid for by the government. And the White House has emphasized the medicine supply is not unlimited. Its allocation to states is based on case rates and how much they're using the medicines. Data from last week show southern states are still receiving the most relative to the size of their populations. They also have heavier caseloads. The federal control has led to an outcry about rationing from Republican governors. From Democratic Governor Andy Beshear of Kentucky, a plea to get vaccinated.
So I would say, please, knowing that there's not going to be enough anywhere in the Commonwealth, get that vaccine. Get it because it protects you.
And he adds, getting vaccinated could free up a treatment for someone else who's not. Shep?
Meg, thank you. For more on this, the former FDA commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, author of the new book, Controlled Spread, Why COVID-19 Crushed Us and How We Can Defeat the Next Pandemic. I meant uncontrolled spread. It's there on your screen. He's also a board member of both Pfizer and Illumina. Doctor, thanks as always. I want to talk about the book for sure in a minute, but Meg just reported the Biden administration taking over monoclonal antibody treatment distribution. It's restricting access in some places. Is that the right move?
Well, look, just to take a step back, this was a foreseeable problem. We knew that in the setting of a pandemic, the first line of defense against a new viral contagion would be a therapeutic antibody, a monoclonal antibody like these drugs. These drugs have proved successful for other viruses, including Ebola. We also had one in development against MERS, another coronavirus that was never fully developed when that coronavirus largely disappeared. We didn't have the capacity, the excess capacity in this country to scale the production of these drugs. That's why we're dealing with the shortage that we have right now. Regeneron, in this case, took extraordinary steps to free up their U.S. facility. They effectively moved all the manufacture of all of their drugs out of their New York facility, which is an enormous facility, into a plant in Ireland to free up that entire New York facility. So they're using their entire plant in the United States to manufacture these drugs. It's still not enough. So it's an indication of where we lack the resiliency and the forward planning to try to prepare for a pandemic, which obviously is a subject of the book that I just wrote. But in terms of what the federal government's doing now, trying to administer these supplies on a more equitable basis and not effectively rationing it right now. I think what they want to do is get better control over the supply so that they don't oversupply certain parts of the country relative to others. Now, the bottom line is that the epidemic's declining very rapidly in the South, so I expect that demand's also going to plummet in the southern states that have been demanding the most of these drugs, and you're going to see the demand shift to other parts of the country.
Yep. Wonder where those are going to be. We shall see. In your book, Dr. Gottlieb, you write about conversations you had with former President Trump last March. This was after you had stepped down as FDA commissioner. What did you advise him on?
Well, I talked to him on a range of issues. I had talked to the president when he made the decision to pull out of the World Health Organization and tried to encourage him not to do that, offered some alternatives that we could engage in to send our displeasure to the Chinese government without fully pulling out of the WHO. I had also talked to the president at the time that we were contemplating taking tougher action, the mitigation steps to try to slow the spread. This was back in early March. At the time that I talked to the president, I think that the White House staff had brought me in to try to make the case that we needed to take more stringent action at that point. The president was mostly sold on the steps that they eventually took. It was shortly after that meeting that the president signed on to an effort to step up what we were doing. That was the 15 days to slow the spread. But at the point at which I talked to him, he was mostly convinced, I think, that we needed to take tougher action. I spoke to him again on another occasion about a month later about some of the therapeutics that were in development, particularly hydroxychloroquine. And at that point, and this has been well reported already, the president wanted to authorize that drug, the more access to that drug, and ultimately made a decision not to intervene to do that and left the decision ultimately to the FDA.
Dr. Gottlieb, we've gotten a lot more data on boosters in recent days. Are you concerned that the FDA and the administration are putting out, I don't know, confusing, sometimes conflicting messages on boosters?
Well, I think the meeting created a perception that there could be conflicting messages. I don't think that that's the case. The FDA at first voted on boosters for the entire age range, 16 and up, ultimately settled on a recommendation that boosters should be made available to people 65 and older and those who are at risk of a severe outcome from COVID, those who are at more risk from the disease itself. That seemed to be always where the FDA was heading. Administratively, they wanted to take a vote on the first question before they ultimately settled on the second question of administering it to a specific age cohort. And so I think it created a perception that the agency voted down boosters before they voted for it. That wasn't the case. It was more an administrative action. And I think that that's where it created some public confusion. CDC is not going to take up this recommendation. I would expect that they'll provide some more granularity around it, maybe expand the recommendation a little bit. That's ultimately what CDC has in their purview. They provide granular guidance to physicians and patients, and they interpret the recommendations that come out of the Food and Drug Administration. So, for example, they might say that they might enumerate the kinds of severe conditions that would qualify someone for a booster.
Dr. Gottlieb, thanks so much. Good luck with the book.
Thanks a lot.
Officials in North Carolina say they have lost track of thousands of convicts released on probation or parole. And now some of those are accused of new crimes, including killing an evacuee from Hurricane Ida. Going on the offensive, the U.S. Treasury unleashes its first sanctions on a cryptocurrency exchange. The alleged actions that sparked this aggressive response.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
The Pentagon launching a senior-level investigation of the U.S. drone strike that killed 10 civilians, including 7 children, in Kabul last month. The Air Force's Inspector General leading the review. He has 45 days to complete it. The Pentagon initially claimed the strike blew up an ISIS-K car bomb that posed a threat to U.S. forces at Kabul's airport back during the final days of the evacuation. But defense officials later acknowledged it was a tragic mistake. That strike came just 3 days after an ISIS-K suicide bomber and gunman killed 13 American troops and scores of Afghans outside the airport. Veterans who were discharged from the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell will be eligible for full VA benefits. That's the message from the Department of Veterans Affairs. It comes 10 years after President Obama repealed the policy. The newly issued guidance applies to all service members discharged over their sexual orientation, gender identity, or HIV status. They'll now be eligible for employment benefits, home loan guarantees, and health care. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was enacted in 1994. It barred openly gay, lesbian, and bisexual people from serving in the military. The White House reports the military has discharged more than 100,000 people because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, nearly 14,000 of those under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The state of North Carolina lost track of more than 11,000 convicts after they were released from prison on probation or parole. A small group of them had been convicted of child abuse, kidnapping, rape, or murder. That's according to a report from our NBC affiliate in Charlotte. Malik Moore is among the convicts who recently dodged court-ordered supervision since early this month. Local officials released him on parole last month. Since then, cops say he's accused of attacking a woman and accused of 2 murders. Cops say Moore is now back in custody. But over the past month, he was supposed to be monitored by North Carolina Community Corrections. In a statement, a spokesperson for the group wrote in part, "Community Corrections makes every effort to locate individuals who have abandoned from probation, parole, or post-release supervision. Regretfully, some individuals willfully avoid supervision." Climate change, diplomacy, and a global pandemic. President Biden touched on all of those in his first address to the United Nations General Assembly. But did he take advantage of his biggest moment so far on the world stage? Apple, tapping into your mental health. how their technology and your personal habits may be used to detect any cause for harm. And new tonight, U.S. pilots assaulted, ICE agents injured. In just the last hour, reports of violence on a plane deporting migrants back to Haiti. As we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. The Golden Arch is going green. McDonald's pledging today to offer more sustainable Happy Meal toys made with dramatically less plastic by the year 2025, or the end of that year. The goal here, to slash 90% of the amount of plastic not made from recycled materials that it used in its toys back in 2018. The decision set to affect one of the staples of the fast food industry. Each year, McDonald's sells more than a billion Happy Meal toys in more than 100 countries. CNBC's Kate Rogers now. What should kids expect to see in the boxes now, or once they've done this?
Sure, Shep. So the Happy Meal is getting a bit greener. The toys included in the meals will be made from more sustainable materials, as you mentioned, by 2025. Some toys will be made with plant-derived or recycled materials, while others will have more significant changes to their appearances. Action figures and movie characters will be 3D cutouts rather than plastic, like this Minion here, made out of paper. And here you can see some Batman playing cards, also made out of paper. These new toys should start to appear in the U.S. in January. The company said it's already slashed its use of virgin fossil fuel-based plastic in toys by about 30% worldwide since 2018 in markets including France, the U.K., and Ireland. It's also made some changes to the food in Happy Meals in recent years, reflecting a healthier shift to food with less sodium, sugar, and calories after public outcry, Shep.
What's brought this about now? Just public pressure or what?
So companies around the globe are facing increased pressure, of course, from both customers and from some investors who are seeking greener investments. McDonald's is a market leader and has also made some changes to its menu to be more environmentally friendly and healthy in recent years. In fact, in 2019, these two British school children actually started a petition that generated international attention asking fast food giants McDonald's and Burger King to scrap the plastic toys in their children's meal deals. Now, the company said it's also been listening to feedback from current parents, customers, and even from kids who are concerned about the planet.
If your Happy Meals are a little bit greener, if your packaging is cleaner, if your food is a little bit cleaner, all those, you know, put together create this halo for the brand, which is what they're trying to accomplish. So again, a small step seems almost insignificant, but I think over time with everything else that they're doing, it's much more meaningful.
Another new upcoming toy here, Shep. It's a bamboo flower pot with seeds that you can then plant in the ground. Oh, big well, shift here for McDonald's.
Yeah, looks like a must-have. Kate, thank you. I'll take a Big Mac. Cracking down on crypto. That's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. The Treasury Department announcing today it'll sanction a cryptocurrency exchange for its alleged role in laundering ransoms for cyber attacks. SUEX, Soups? I don't know. The company's accused of facilitating transactions involving the money from at least 8 ransomware attacks. This is the first action of its kind against a virtual currency exchange. Apple working on technology to help you understand what ails your brain. Wall Street Journal reports the iPhone maker is working with UCLA and Biogen to come up with software that would diagnose depression and cognitive decline. Lots of sensor data would come together, including physical activity, mobility, and facial expressions, plus typing and sleep patterns. Reps for the company involved declined to comment. And Chipotle rolling out new food, smoked brisket, after 2 years of testing, has just arrived at the American Grill. Here's the commercial. The company reports the 24 million members of its loyalty program can order the brisket through the Chipotle website today, and then everybody else can get it on third-party apps by next week. Brisket at Chipotle! For a limited time only. On Wall Street, the Dow down 51, the S&P down 4, the NASDAQ up 33. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news.
Fighting to keep America's schools open, The extreme shortage of bus drivers, forcing some states to get help from the National Guard. New reports the FBI withheld key information back in July that could have helped the victims of one of the largest criminal ransomware sprees in history. And violence breaks out on a flight carrying migrants back to Haiti.
NBC News has learned Haitian migrants who were deported to Haiti today attacked pilots and immigration officers on another flight after it landed in Port-au-Prince. So the plane carrying single adult men were released from the aircraft to Haitian authorities on the airport tarmac. Then NBC News reports several of those men stormed another recently arrived jet carrying families. The Biden administration has been ramping up the flights after more than 15,000, mostly Haitian migrants, crossed into Texas from Mexico and set up a makeshift camp under a bridge. In Del Rio, here's NBC's Morgan Chesky.
Chef, numbers are going down here in Del Rio, but there are still about 8,600 migrants beneath the border bridge about a half mile from where I'm standing. Processing those people an absolute priority because of the brutal conditions here. It's still reaching about 100 degrees during the day. And while they are getting a little food and water, I have had migrants tell me what is being handed out is not enough. As it stands right now, we know that many of these migrants have been taken to nearby shelters and or processing centers. We had a chance to speak to one 25-year-old man who told us that he's on his way to Houston before hopefully connecting with family in Brooklyn. But he told us of the struggles beneath that bridge for the past week with his pregnant wife, saying that at one point he swam back to Mexico to buy enough food and water so that his family would be okay because he couldn't rely on what was being handed out by the government. Now, we heard from Secretary Mayorkas earlier today who said despite the current size of the encampment here, the goal is to have everything cleared out, everyone processed within the next 10 days. However, when you see the sheer size of it still beneath that bridge, it remains to be seen if that will actually happen in the next week or so. Shep?
Morgan, thanks. A person who traveled with the director of the CIA is now reporting symptoms of a directed energy attack known as Havana syndrome. That's the mysterious illness that appears to be targeting U.S. diplomats and spies and other government workers around the world. The unidentified employee was traveling with the director, William Burns, during a trip to India this month. Sources tell NBC News the person was immediately tested and is now being treated as part of a new protocol that the CIA has established. NBC News has also learned the Secretary of State Blinken had his first meeting with staffers in Cuba and China who were also afflicted with Havana syndrome symptoms. That meeting described as tense. Secretary Blinken told them the administration is doing all it can to investigate and provide care. But NBC News spoke with people who were on that call who say there's a bit of a gap between the administration's public message and the treatment they're getting. Americans have been affected in spots around the globe since the first occurrences in Cuba. In Berlin, American diplomats reported getting so sick they couldn't do their jobs anymore. And several FBI employees in Vienna also reported symptoms. They're including a loud piercing or grinding noise, followed by vertigo, nausea in some cases, even brain damage. The Taliban doubling down on having a government of only men. The militant group today announced a new slate of deputy ministers to lead Afghanistan. Yet again, the Taliban did not name any women. The government spokesman claims the appointees were chosen for their technical skills. President Biden delivered his debut speech at the United Nations today. He told world leaders the United States is taking a new approach after ending America's longest war.
We've ended 20 years of conflict in Afghanistan. And as we close this period of relentless war, we're opening a new era of relentless diplomacy. I stand here today for the first time in 20 years with the United States not at war. We've turned the page.
The president said the next 10 years will be a decisive decade for our world. He called for global unity to fight climate change, the pandemic, and other dire threats to come. President Biden's push for diplomacy comes as the U.S. faces a major rift with one of our closest allies, France. And China is accusing the Biden administration of stoking a new arms race in the Pacific Ocean. CNBC senior White House correspondent Kayla Tausche now. Kayla, President Biden has a bit of a veiled message for Beijing.
That's right, Shep. The Secretary General of the UN has repeatedly warned of a great fracture afoot between those two superpowers. But today, President Biden said he was more interested in competition, not conflict.
We'll stand up for our allies and our friends and oppose attempts by stronger countries to dominate weaker ones, whether through changes to territory by force, economic coercion, technical exploitation, or disinformation. But we're not seeking, say it again, we are not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks.
But unlike his predecessor, Biden did not mention Beijing by name, a bet that actions like powering Australia's submarines in the Indo-Pacific will speak louder than words. While Biden celebrated that deal in bilateral meetings in New York with Australia's leader and with the UK back at the White House, the diplomatic rift with France left out of that deal is so far unmended, with its delegation attending remotely. Press Secretary Jen Psaki said a phone call between the two countries is still in the works. As the U.S. tries to conjure unity on fighting COVID, it faces skeptics like Brazil's far-right president flouting the U.N.'s vaccine requirement and defending disproven medical treatments as that country's death toll nears 600,000. President Biden said the U.S. has spent $15 billion fighting COVID and shipping 160 million vaccines overseas. And tonight, a source confirms to me that the White House is in talks to option half a billion more doses from Pfizer, too. Shep?
Kayla, thanks. And NBC News has just confirmed that the Taliban have asked the United Nations to address the World Assembly this week. The Taliban, as a recognized government in the Emirate of Afghanistan. That's brand new. There's no word yet from the UN on that request. Well, the FBI had access to a secret digital key that could have helped unlock hundreds of computers hit in one of the largest ransomware attacks ever. That's the reporting of the Washington Post. But instead of sharing that information with the victims, the FBI held onto it for several weeks. The Post reports the FBI made the decision while it pursued an operation to knock out a Russian cyber gang called R-Evil. It was the group behind the ransomware attack that hit the software company Kaseya over the 4th of July weekend. The Post reports FBI officials feared that sharing the digital key with the victims would tip off the terrorists, or R-Evil, that the Bureau had secret access to its servers. But the FBI's plans were thwarted when the hacking group took itself offline in mid-July. Kaseya estimates up to 1,500 businesses were affected by the ransomware attack. Analysts say sharing the key earlier could have helped them avoid millions of dollars in recovery costs. FBI Director Christopher Wray testified before Congress today. He said testing and validating the decryption key contributed to the delay, but that he can't comment further because of, altogether now, it's an ongoing investigation. Another unexpected side effect of the pandemic, a tight supply of liquid oxygen. Not just hospitals feeling the pinch, everything from space companies to utilities. The largest tree in the world in danger of burning. Firefighters out west getting creative in their efforts to save General Sherman from the threat far from over. A government panel in India is set to look into how oxygen shortages in hospitals there played a role in the country's COVID deaths. The Indian government also building up its supply of medical oxygen. Local officials say they plan to ramp up production by 50% before a potential third wave of COVID. They're trying to avoid a repeat of these scenes from a few months ago. Anguished family members scrambling to find oxygen for their loved ones as COVID pushed India's health system to the brink of collapse. Liquid oxygen is still readily available in the United States, but hospital systems across the land are trying to make sure the supply keeps flowing. CBC's Contessa Brewer live outside a hospital in New York City on what health experts are saying now. Contessa?
Shep, COVID's caused a massive spike in the need for medical oxygen, and hospitals around the country are struggling to balance supply with demand.
There was a period where we had a number of hospitals that had less than 48 hours worth of oxygen, and that is at a time when hospitals are using 3 to 4 times the amount of oxygen that they normally use.
In Florida, the urgent need for liquid oxygen means prioritizing medical over industrial use. Tampa switched from oxygen to chlorine to treat its water supply, warning customers their water might taste or smell different. In Orlando,
we wanted to ask our customers to help us through this difficult situation, and so we asked them to conserve. And one of the easiest ways they can do that is to stop irrigation.
Other industries that rely on oxygen have cut back. Welding and steel and space. The president of SpaceX recently warned it could affect launch plans. But the trade group that represents oxygen manufacturers says it's not a shortage, but tightness in the supply chain.
I think it's important to note that since the beginning of this crisis back in March of 2020, there has been no hospital that we are aware of that has gone without medical oxygen, nor has a single patient died in the United States for lack of medical oxygen.
Not the case elsewhere in the world. In India, a critical shortage of oxygen has led to hundreds of deaths, according to health officials. The World Health Organization in February said it would cost $1.6 billion to remedy the global oxygen shortage for a year. Now, that number skyrocketed to $6.5 billion. And U.S. hospitals monitoring their oxygen supply say often it's too close for comfort.
It's one thing to run low on masks and gowns and gloves. It is an entirely different situation when you are critically low on oxygen.
Another reason for the tightening supply, liquid oxygen doesn't travel well. It has to be made close to where it's used. And there's a shortage of truck drivers who are trained to carry that oxygen. Chip.
Thanks so much, Contessa. As millions of children across the country return to school this fall, a new labor shortage could mean they might not even get there. More than half of the school districts in America report they don't have enough bus drivers. 51% of districts describe their driver shortage as severe or desperate, and 65% responded that it's their number one problem or concern, all from a new industry study. The problem is so bad that the state of Ohio is considering whether to have the National Guard drive school buses. That's already happened in Massachusetts. Here's a video of the troops going through training. They're usually called in to help with natural disasters or civil unrest. Now, they're driving kids to school. The New York governor, Kathy Hochul, also announced steps to address the shortage of school bus drivers, including opening new testing sites for commercial driver's license applicants. Wildfires in California still ripping through Sequoia National Park. But there is some good news to report tonight. Local officials say several of the most iconic trees are safe, at least for now. Hundreds of firefighters have been working day and night to protect the sequoias from fast-moving flames. Here's NBC's Erin McLaughlin.
This morning, some of the world's largest and most iconic trees are just feet from the flames. Teams of firefighters are racing against time to save historic redwoods from a raging wildfire tearing through the Sequoia National Forest. The threat intensifying in recent days after lightning strikes ignited two uncontrollable wildfires, which merged into one massive blaze. The KPN complex fire has already torched over 23,000 acres. Firefighters struggling to get the upper hand.
It's incredibly steep. The fuels are incredibly dry. All of that makes this a very difficult fire to fight, very dangerous.
The burn area visible from space as it closes in on the so-called giant forest, home to General Sherman, the largest tree in the world. The giant sequoia, which is over 2,000 years old and stands towering 275 feet high, almost as tall as the Statue of Liberty, has attracted tourists from around the world. The flames creeping closer, crews covered the base of its massive trunk with fire-resistant wrapping in an effort to protect it. As those once awed by the forest's beauty...
Look at that!
...now shocked by the threat of devastation.
The fear is that you won't be able to see wonder in nature the way that people 100 generations before you saw it.
Officials say the fire has already burned the inside of these trees, rooted just a few hundred feet from General Sherman, and the threat not isolated.
Another fire burning just 40 miles to the south has swallowed over 25,000 acres and threatens more giant sequoias. This area is no stranger to this kind of destruction. Just last year, California's Castle Fire alone incinerated 10% of the world's giant sequoia population.
The wildfires that we're seeing are not natural anymore. They're amplified as a result of human choices and human activity.
Now, as the flames rage, the race is on to protect these towering treasures. For the news, I'm Erin McLaughlin.
A museum dedicated to the movies, going behind the scenes of the past, present, and future of Hollywood. We get a sneak peek next. And a kid's first toy is kind of a big deal. But would you spend six figures on it? If the answer is yes, Aston Martin and James Bond have something special for you. Movies are finally getting their own museum. It's called the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures, a massive 300,000-square-foot building with multiple exhibitions and retrospectives on the history of film. Half the space is a restored relic from 1939, the other a glass sphere with a terrace on top and a theater inside. The cost to build? Almost $500 million. The Academy pulling from its collection of more than 13 million film artifacts, including Bruce, the animatronic shark from Jaws, and the iconic Rosebud sled from Citizen Kane on loan from Steven Spielberg. There's an Oscars experience where museum-goers can pretend to win their own Oscar. The museum's set to open to the public next week, but we got an early peek. Here's NBC4 Los Angeles reporter Ted Chen.
Do we need a movie museum? Yeah, because we need to celebrate everything that this town has brought to the world and everything art form has brought to the world in order to bring people together.
To protect yourself on set is not an easy thing.
Hollywood hasn't always brought people together, and the museum doesn't shy away from that, with documentaries and exhibits showing its history of racism and sexism, as well as celebrating when it has been inclusive, including an exhibit showcasing the work of director Spike Lee.
I'm suggesting that an aspiration to inclusiveness, however imperfectly it may be realized, is inherent in the art of film.
There's a lot of racism and oppression in the history of movie making. We want to confront that and discuss it and create a safe space for those conversations.
All of it beneath a giant glass-topped concrete sphere designed by famed Italian architect Renzo Piano, who has but one request. Call it a spaceship, call it a soap bubble, but don't...
Don't call, please, this the Death Star.
For the news, I'm Ted Chen.
Well, the Death Star, museum opens to the public at the end of this month with a screening of The Wizard of Oz. When it comes to iconic movie memorabilia, James Bond has all the grown-up toys you can imagine. Exploding pens, camera guns, glove compartment defibrillators. Now a pint-sized version of one of his legendary cars. Today, Aston Martin and the Little Car Company announced a very expensive Bond car for kids. The Aston Martin DB5 Junior No Time to Die Edition. It's two-thirds the size of the car in the movie. Top speed, about 45 miles an hour, with a working smokescreen and fake Gatling guns in the headlights, because why not? But the price tag to become a mini James Bond is steep. Only 125 cars to be made, and the company reports each will cost about $123,000. Mini golf. Not a professional sport, more of a national family pastime. But two 11-year-olds in Minnesota are not only playing mini golf, they're building it. The story from NBC station Care 11 and their reporter Boyd Hoopert.
When a childhood friendship is this right,
got pressure.
A tennis ball and a garage door cord are all the inspiration one needs for a newly invented game.
They're kind of like two peas in a pod.
Just ask the parents of Henrik Wickstrom and Hudson Folan.
They get ideas and they run with them.
And not just ideas. Born in garages.
They're always coming up with something.
Two 11-year-olds in the woods with a wheelbarrow.
It's so hard to maneuver.
What could possibly go right?
We were bored drinking Kool-Aid. And then Henrik said, why don't we make a mini golf course?
scorecard? You're going to hit through it.
Henrik and Hudson started last summer.
You're going to get a three.
With a single golf hole in the woods next to Hudson's house.
Eight. Over par.
One became two, then three. Then the boys found themselves on a mission, designing and building holes till they reached their ninth. Cups missing from the kitchen? Their moms know where to find them. Old piece of dryer vent?
Should I hit it hard? Yes.
Or a rusty roll
hard as it can.
Of chicken wire? Their wheels are already turning.
Yes!
Anna could always say, can I go to Hudson's? Can I go to Hudson's? We got to work on the mini golf course.
Par for the course for two boys who at four met on the sidelines of their older sister's soccer games. A friendship cemented by Henrik's and Hudson's creative imaginations.
They don't like sitting and playing video games. They'd rather be outside doing something.
I'm going to hit the thank you sign.
Earlier this summer, full circle.
No penalty, please.
When their mini golf course provided the entertainment for the grad party of Hudson's soccer-playing sister.
You got an eagle, I got a birdie.
Not, of course, for the easily frustrated.
Par five, so.
He changed one hole. It was going to be a par 20.
Tough, yes. But disagreements?
You're still ahead of me.
None they can think of.
We just changed the subject, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Most of the time. Yeah. Three.
Hudson.
You made it.
And Henrik.
Nice shot.
Didn't invent the game of mini golf.
You beat me.
But they did discover, under nature's canopy, mini golf's perfect boyhood version.
Winner takes the scorecard.
For the news, I'm Boyd Hooper, Hermantown.
Thank you, Boyd. 45 seconds on a race to the finish. An autopsy confirms the body found near Grand Teton National Park is Gabby Petito's. The coroner there ruling it a homicide, but the official cause of death has yet to be released. Investigators spent the day searching a nature reserve in Florida for her boyfriend and person of interest, Brian Laundrie. And a panel of CDC advisors expected to meet tomorrow to discuss booster shots for people 65 and older and for those who were at high risk of severe disease. And now, you know the news of this Tuesday, September the 21st, 2021. I'm Shepard Smith. Goofy golf would be nice, wouldn't it? If the kids would have us over. See you back here tomorrow night. Have a great one. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.